Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm John Davis. Iconic indie folk rock singer, songwriter, and guitarist Ani DiFranco has been breaking boundaries and paving her own path through the music scene for more than three decades. The Grammy Award-winning artist created her own record company, Righteous Babe Records, in 1989 at the age of just 19. Soon after, she released her debut solo album, and she's been writing and performing ever since, with 20 studio albums now under her belt. Her record label to date has sold more than 5.5 million albums. Aside from her music career, DiFranco has made a name for herself as an advocate on behalf of progressive issues, including women's reproductive rights, racial justice, environmental conservation, gender equality, and prison reform, themes that are often prevalent in her music. And now Ani DiFranco is out with a new memoir titled No Walls and the Recurring Dream, recounting stories from her upbringing, the early years of her music career, and her insights on storytelling, political activism, feminism, and much more. I recently had the opportunity to connect with Ani DiFranco for a conversation about the book, her music, and even some political involvement right here in Southwest Florida. Let's hear that conversation now.
Hello.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking the time to speak with me today. I really appreciate it.
All right, John. Thank you.
You know, you've written 21 folk rock albums, two books of poetry. So I know you're accustomed to the practice of putting your thoughts out there in a very public way. But writing a memoir, that seems like it's got to be different or perhaps more difficult.
Yes, both. I really upped the ante. Even after hundreds of songs and poems and putting myself out there, like you say, this felt dangerous.
Dangerous is an interesting word. I know the book includes some pretty frank explorations of personal relationships in your life, and that kind of got me thinking about author David Sedaris, who his stories are so autobiographical. He even talks about members of his family becoming reluctant to tell him anything because it'll become part of his books. Is that something you thought about when you were writing about these relationships, people in your life, you know, reading these words published?
Yeah, of course. I had to, in fact, very deliberately, vehemently not think about it as much as I could, you know, just to move through the process authentically and, you know, bravely. I had to pretend I was alone. But of course, I'm not alone. I am sharing these things. And the memoir, yeah, I mean, it's one thing to put yourself out there the way that I have in song, and it's another thing to literally put other people out there, you know, in telling the story, you know, quote unquote, of my life. Of course, it includes a lot of other people. And, you know, I've been very afraid to hurt feelings, to step on toes. But it's been, you know, the aftermath, you know, people have been saying, will you do this again? Is there going to be a part two? And I keep saying, talk to me in July, you know, because how people respond. And I mean that, you know, starting with my family and then my near and dear and moving outward from there will be a big part of this experience for me.
And of course, you know, family and intimacy, it seems like a seemingly constant motif in the memoir, intimacy, how you seek it out and, you know, maybe how that's changed or evolved over the years. I was hoping you could speak to that.
Yeah. I mean, the No Walls that kicks off the story is literally the house I grew up in, which had no physical walls in it. So me and my brother and my parents were very, you know, a lot of physical intimacy, not a lot of emotional intimacy. So I've been grappling with that weird dynamic my whole life. But what I found when I started to show myself through my songs and my writing was I could make not just friends, but family with people out there in the world. And that provided me with something I was sort of emotionally missing in my early life. So, yeah, I mean, it's this journey through writing has all about been achieving, you know, that sort of intimate space of seeing and being seen with others.
Yeah, and I'm going to switch gears a little bit because at one point in the book you explore the decision to shave your head and the impact that had, and I wanted you to talk about that because you with the shaved head, like, that's the Ani DiFranco that I first got to know. So,
Oh, wow. We go back. Yeah.
Yes.
That was, yeah, I mean, I first shaved it in 89. And there was not a real cultural context for that sort of hairdo by a young woman and a young white woman. So then I was portrayed or perceived, I noticed immediately as a sort of a threat, like maybe a skinhead or a punk or, you know, some anti-authoritarian kid that's going to come break stuff and steal stuff. And so it was a real eye-opening experience for me to just take away my hair out of the equation and suddenly be treated very differently. And, you know, in the book, I sort of, I felt like it was a tiny lesson for me in what atmospheric prejudice feels like, the kind of which I could never really experience in my privileged position in society. But, you know, I felt like, yeah, why is everybody uncomfortable with me? This is ridiculous. And it actually kind of made me mad. The anger accumulated in me over time as I was treated like public enemy number one.
Do you feel like, in a way, that maybe even paved the way for, you know, young women who would come a generation later? I'm thinking about a lot of musicians I know on the local scene here in Southwest Florida, you know, who have either shaved all or just most of their hair off, mm-hmm. or, you know, mm-hmm. they've dyed it all kinds of crazy colors that don't exist in nature. And there's a lot less pressure mm-hmm. today than there would have been mm-hmm. when you had did this. You know, it doesn't seem like maybe they face the same kind of pressures or, I guess, a lack of acceptance for not conforming to those norms.
Yeah. I remember back in the day when I had a, quote, earring through my nose and, you know, tattoos on my hand of all places, you know, and these kind of symbols in society that people were very wary of. But, you know, I was pushing boundaries. I just had this inherent instinct to do so, I guess. And, yeah, you know, I was part of a broader, you know, process of pushing boundaries, not just for women, but, you know, just asking questions about the way it is. And is that really the way it has to be?
Right. You know, one thing that really surprised me about the book is that it doesn't read like a typical musician's memoir. There's definitely fewer pages specifically about your music career than there are pages exploring your ideas about politics, about art, about life. Yeah. Was that an intentional decision?
No, I mean, not exactly. I when I'm writing and creating, I try to not think as much as possible, you know, and just go by feel, you know, just follow my nose, you know. And I did find I was writing a lot of my ideas down, a lot of, you know, blowing a lot of hot air instead of just saying what happened. And I, not only that, but I found that those are the places when I was writing that I got really excited, you know. So I almost had to try to hold myself back, like, okay, tell a story, Ani, tell a story, because, you know, I wanted to find an appropriate balance, at least, between idea sharing and storytelling, and not just make people sit down and listen to me pontificate for hours. You know, I wanted to sort of sew it together in a story that still had motion. So that was a big part of the struggle for me with this book, was finding that balance.
I wanted to focus in a little bit on politics, because part of my job as the morning news host at an NPR affiliate is scouring as many other local news sources as I can every day, searching for important stories that maybe my team had missed. And one day last year, I did a double take. I'm reading a Sarasota Herald Tribune paper, and I see your name in a headline, and it's about you weighing in on this local Florida State House race, tweeting your support for the Democratic candidate Tracy Pratt, who I understand you met through, you know, your common advocacy for, you know, civil justice reform and being against the death penalty. Is that how you met Tracy, I imagine?
Yeah, I met Tracy when she lived in New Orleans, where I still live, and yeah, just a fine, fine person who's been doing great work her whole life, and I know brings, you know, a real sort of public servant motivation to her running for office, you know, and she's a friend of mine. So, yeah, I had to just, I know it's so hard for all of us to discern who are these politicians and what really does motivate them and who's putting on a show and who's the real deal. And, you know, I just wanted to send out there in the universe a tiny way that I know Tracy and she's the real deal.
Do you feel, I don't want to say a burden, but like almost like an obligation to maybe use your influence and your notoriety to, you know, in the political arena to, you know, talk about candidates who you do know and you support, even if it's on this hyper-local level?
Yeah, sure. And I don't even, it doesn't have to be that direct. It's just a matter of standing in your own shoes, you know, being true to your own perceptions, your own experience, even when it, the expression thereof is unwelcome, is you know, pushed back and down and away and repeatedly, you know, to continue to do the work of being authentically yourself and responsible to your role as a citizen, you know, in a society. I think that's a ingredient that I've always tried to factor in. And I'm not sure where I was going with that.
Oh, that's okay.
Sorry, John.
No. In that same vein, I was thinking about other celebrities I've seen recently taking a stand on some issues, like actor Jason Bateman saying he wouldn't, you know, bring any projects for TV or film to Georgia any longer because of the, you know, the anti-abortion heartbeat bill that recently passed there. Of course, four other states have recently passed draconian legislation that really goes against, you know, the autonomy of women's bodies. And
yeah.
And then I think about someone like you, and would that really be an option for you? Like, would you cancel a show in Georgia? Because I'm thinking, well, on the other hand, the people who are going to be paying money to come to an Ani DiFranco concert, they're by and large going to be the same people fighting against that. And hearing you perform is going to be like this inspirational shot in the arm to keep up that advocacy. So,
yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's an interesting choice. And I am one who my instinct is when there is a wound, go there. You know, you need to lay on more hands. You need to heal this incredibly painful backsliding and just decimation of women and their lives and their ability to become themselves, their ability to take a part in their society, in their world. You know, enforced reproduction is the most primitive of forms of repression. I mean, at one point, you know, there was the bathroom bill in North Carolina. I don't know if you remember. And there was this huge movement of boycotting North Carolina around that. And huge sports teams and corporations were not going to move their offices there, and et cetera, et cetera. So there was this incredible momentum of boycott that I did join in at that time. I was slated to do a show in North Carolina, but I thought, wow, this for once, there is a united front against a bad law, and a lot of really palpable economic pressure. So, which did have a great effect and did turn around that legislation. So taking part in that seemed like the right thing to do in that context. But mostly I'm sort of with the spirit that you seem to be illuminating too, of you can't, you know, ignore a wound and hope it goes away. Not that a boycott is ignoring, but for me, I almost, my instinct is to move closer. And certainly, like you say, go support the good people fighting the good fight, you know, for women's freedom, for their liberation. One of the things I've been doing for years is every town I go to, just comping tickets to the local women's clinics, because exactly as you say, a night of joy and togetherness can give you fuel to go back to your hard work the next day and, you know, for time to come.
Well said. Arnie DeFranco, thank you so much for taking the time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
That was indie folk rock music icon, singer, songwriter, and guitarist Arnie DeFranco. Her new memoir, No Walls and the Recurring Dream, came out in hardback in May. Her Grammy Award-winning music now includes 20 studio albums. She's also the creator of the independent music label Righteous Babe Records, which has sold more than 5.5 million albums. That's all the time we have for today's show. I want to thank my guests from the first part of our program, Ann Dodd and Sonia McCarter. Dodd is directing and McCarter is acting in the Theater Conspiracy's upcoming production of playwright Stephen Dietz's dark comedy Rancho Mirage at the Alliance for the Arts in Fort Myers. Performances begin tomorrow evening and run through June 23rd. For tickets and showtimes, visit artinlee.org/theater. Our show today was produced by Mike Canary and yours truly. Our director is Richard Cinqui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm John Davis. This is WGCU-FM Fort Myers 90.1, WMKO Marco Island 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.